This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to our continuing series on the WWE 100 Greatest Superstars of All Time. I'm Scott Criscolo. Joining me to my right, as always, Jason Greenhouse. And we are one of many. You've heard them on the network and have heard them on placetobenation.com. We're helping all of you. You guys know the project. We are sometime in 2018, probably before WrestleMania 30, in New Orleans, we are going to give you the official Place to Be Nation top 100 superstars of all time. But we want all of you to formulate your own lists and really think about it. That's why this process is going for months and months and months. And right now, Greeny and I are going to take you back through the Federation era, because obviously a decent hunk of the top 100 will indeed be from probably 1970 through 1992, because a lot of these guys are the torchbearers of the business. And tonight we're going to talk about a guy that some newer fans, Greeny, may think is just a big, fat, disgusting slob who wore bows in his hair and lots of strange scarves. But in reality, when you look at brass tacks, this guy, for me, one of the 100 greatest of all time, and that is indeed the adorable one, Adrian Adonis.
Yeah, Adonis is one of those guys where, being 5 and 6 years old when I first started watching the then WWF, I just thought of Adrian as just this big, fat pile of garbage who, and that's all he was. But before other big men came around to the WWF, such as Bam Bam Bigelow and Yokozuna and the Big Boss Man, these big guys who can move around in the ring, Adrian Adonis was one of these guys. And he wasn't always a top challenger for Hogan and for the belt, but he always brought something to the table in every match. There's a bunch of tag team matches out there where, you know, you see him in the ring with, you know, teaming up with Randy Savage or a few other guys. And in reality, he doesn't belong in the same ring as these guys, but he can hang with them. And he was so fun to watch. He did get bigger in size as his career went along, probably from not taking care of himself and some personal recreational issues that he had. But he always brought his A-game every single match he was in. A solid promo. Very, very easy to hate. Especially if you watch some of these weekly syndicated shows such as Championship Wrestling, Superstars, and Challenge in 86 and 87. There was a lot of derogatory stuff said to him from people in the crowd that would never make TV today. But he was so easy to hate. But looking back 30 years later and watching his career, he was so enjoyable. And even early on when he came in to the WWF along with Jesse Ventura in the East-West Connection after their little stint in the AWA, he was an exceptional challenger for Backlund for the world title in the Garden in Philly and Boston, and for Pedro in the IC belt in those same markets. And then he formed a fantastic, very underrated tag team with Dick Murdoch, kind of the North South connection, if you will, with Adonis being from New York and Murdoch being from Texas. And they had some pretty solid matches against the Wild Samoans and a few other teams at the Garden and on the weekly All Star Wrestling back in '83 and '84. So this is a guy who has gotten better with age as far as watching his stuff over again. His singles matches, you can pretty much pull up anything from the Garden or from Philly. He had some matches pre-WrestleMania 3 against Piper, against Hogan, main eventing the Spectrum, and main eventing Boston. And he would bump around like a pinball for these guys. I mean, Adonis was probably a little over 400 pounds. And he's bumping around like Dolph Ziggler and Rey Mysterio for Hogan and Piper and Tito and a bunch of these other guys. Just really enjoyable to watch. Always putting his body on the line to make all the top baby faces look good.
And that's something I think we really need to talk about is this guy had unbelievable athleticism. You know, again, most younger fans just remember the feud in 86-87 with Piper, and you know, he was pretty gelatinous at that point with the leggings and all that stuff. But when he arrived in 1980, I mean, he was never thin. I think why don't we just lay it out on the line? You know, Adonis was never a very svelte guy, but he was a guy who took advantage of his size, but as you mentioned, can move around the ring unbelievably. And he was almost the high flyer, so to speak, on that tag team, probably with both Jesse and Dick Murdoch. Now, just to clarify, we won't talk much about the tag team with Jesse. That was in the AWA. But it was a precursor to what we would see in 1980, late 83, early 84, when he would team with Dick Murdoch, as you mentioned. Now, obviously, the company thought a lot of this guy because to bring him right in 1980, and he's immediately challenging Bob Backlund. Now, Vince Sr. was very protective of Backlund at that time and of the challengers that he would face in those early years. And again, if you really want a great template of the Bob Backlund world title era, please check out the archive of Titans of Wrestling. Those guys were unreal when it came to breaking down 1976 to 1983 during Bob Backlund's run as world champion. Please check it out. Those guys were incredible. And during that run, you know, they were bringing in new challengers. So obviously, Vince Sr., Greeny, thought quite a bit of Adrian Adonis to put him in immediate feuds, as you mentioned, both with Bob Backlund and Pedro Morales. Both Vince Sr. guys, both very protected. Now, obviously, Vince Sr. and Vern probably had a better relationship than Vince Jr. and Vern did, but obviously, going in, Adrian Adonis was a guy they took seriously.
Yeah, and I think that Adrian was a guy who some people that worked with him up in Minneapolis in the AWA put a good word in for with Vince Sr. Guys like Tito and Sheik and maybe even Andre, guys who had worked with Adrian in the AWA and say, "Hey, Vince, you know you can trust this guy. He's pretty solid in the ring. I think that he could he can do a good program with." With Backlund and a couple of the other top baby faces during that era. So, but later on, like the one thing that Adrian lacked, he was kind of the precursor to what the Brooklyn Brawler became. Adrian was that street tough guy from New York that eventually Steve Lombardi would turn into his own. But you know, one of the things that we're also looking at here is personality and stuff like that. And that's the one thing that he lacked. But once he ran with the adorable gimmick in late 85, I mean, he just took off. He, like I said earlier, he was just somebody. He just, that heel heat that he had just for being that kind of Nancy type of guy in the mid 80s that was wearing, you know, women's scarves and wearing the pink and wearing the makeup and the eyeliner and all that stuff, and you just wanted to hate him. You know, there was guys like Gorgeous George and then Adrian Street in the 80s, and then of course Goldust in the 90s. That flamboyant character, and in between all that, there was Adrian, and he was always solid on the mic. He dressed different, but he always spoke like that New York, you know, tough guy to back up what he did in the ring. Don't let the looks fool you. You know, he was fed some some garbage, I guess you can say, as far as opponents, such as Uncle Elmer now. Guys like JYD, who we had a feud with in late 85 into 86. JYD was still a good worker, but he was kind of past his prime at the time. And like I said, Adrian wasn't a guy who was going to be in the main events on pay-per-views and stuff, but he was always a solid hand. And I think that later on, as he started taking care of himself less, that's when he stopped caring less, and that's when the company saw his value going down. You know, the last big program that he was in, of course, was with Piper. And just some of those classic battles with the Flower Shop against Piper's Pit. Man, what great TV with Piper, you know, having his baby face turn when he came back, and Adrian taking who at first was Piper's bodyguard, Cowboy Bob Orton, and Adrian making him making Orton his own guy by giving him the pink hat, and instead of calling him Ace, he would call him Acey, and then on top of that, having Jimmy Hart with him. Just the perfect picture, the perfect pairing. Now, Adrian had Bobby Heenan as his manager at first in 1985, which Bobby had a different type of guy that he would end up managing later on. But Adrian, once he adapted the adorable character, that was perfect for Jimmy, just because Jimmy's voice, and Jimmy is more colorful than Bobby is, and that's where Adrian fit. So, but yeah, it's all over YouTube. Pull up all the Piper's Pits. Starting in, I believe, the fall of 1986, when Piper comes back as a babyface. And when Piper was gone, making his movies and doing stuff out in Hollywood, they didn't have Piper's Pit, so they needed a weekly TV segment. And that's when Adrian came up with the Flower Shop, which was just the complete opposite of Piper's Pit. And then Piper comes back and is just disgusted by what Adrian turned Piper's Pit into. And Adrian had his little stable of Cowboy Bob Orton and Don Morocco and Jimmy Hart. And then Piper, you know, Piper just being the loner that he was battling all these guys by himself. And of course, leading up to their big match at WrestleMania, where, you know, they just beat the hell out of each other for about 8 minutes. Piper hitting him with the belt from his kilt and everything, and of course the big payoff with it being Piper's last match was Piper and Brutus Beefcake cutting Adrian's hair. And you know, unfortunately after that, Adrian you know, some backstage politics I think came into play on why Adrian left the company soon after WrestleMania 7. But he's a guy who I wouldn't put in the top 50, just because he wasn't a main eventer, but just the character, the way that he moved in the ring, the instant heel heat that he had whenever he would come out in those like Kentucky Derby type hats and the mascara and the bows and all that stuff. People just wanted to hate him. He's a guy who I feel comfortable putting in probably the 70 to 80 tier on my list here. He's a guy who always was a heavy hand in the ring, could go 12 or 15 minutes with guys like Tito and Junkyard Dog and even Paul Orndorff, when Orndorff had his post-WrestleMania 1 babyface turn. But every night, I mean, if you pull up some of the results on the History of WWE website, you see Adrian is working every night, you know, double shots on weekends, and going, you know, 12 or 15 minutes. But for a guy his size, every single night to do this and to put guys over every single night was really, really something that you didn't see often in guys in the 80s as far as heels. But yeah, he did his job and was a heavy hand and a big part, especially in Roddy Piper's last hurrah before retiring in 1987, before he eventually came back in 89. A very high-profile match. But yeah, pull up some of the Piper's Pits. the Piper's Pits and flower shops and even some of the standalone flower shops where Adrian would have different guests on Championship Wrestling in late 85 and throughout 86. There's a tag team match, I believe it's September of 1986. It's a steel cage match at Madison Square Garden that is Bruno Sammartino and Tito Santana against Randy Savage and Adrian Adonis. Now, you take Tito, you take Randy, and you take Bruno, and these are three guys who are just workhorses every single night. And then you have Adrian, who just, he doesn't really belong in the ring with these guys, you know, theoretically, but, oh, man, he's bumping all over this cage for Tito and for Bruno. So definitely seek that match out, too, as well.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Were you managing the East-West Connection? Speaking of the East-West Connection, I do want to clarify that Jesse and Adrian did arrive together in late 81. So as you're deliberating about whether you would want to add Adrian Adonis to your list, you can count a little bit of the East-West Connection. Obviously not the High Flyers feud, another federation, but obviously Jesse came in with Adonis in 81, but they did work singles and tag. They weren't strictly a tag team. You made a of the many exemplary points you made, one of them I want to expound on. Adonis was a guy that obviously Vince trusted, Jr. now, because 85, late 85 into 86, one of the biggest plans they had at the top of the card was turning Paul Orndorff heel and eventually feuding with Hogan for the world title. Who's the linchpin of that? Not Piper. Not any other heel. The Flower Shop. Adrian and Jimmy Hart planting the seed in Orndorff's head that you're just a puppet and Hogan just needs some... He'll need you for his backup, but really he doesn't care about you. And just needling and needling and needling and needling, and finally Orndorff snapped. Adrian Adonis did his job. And pushing that forward to when Piper came back and... What was the term? I think JR used in one of our oldest written vaults. Plaid turned into petunias or something like that. It may not have been JR. Maybe I'm giving him credit for it. But and, you know, having Ace turn on him with the pink hat and his boy Morocco. And he was brilliant at turning the screws. And you hit that nail right on the head. The turning of the screws to the baby faces. And... the guy could work. Yeah, he got fat. All right, whatever. Don Morocco got fat, too, and I'll never take Don Morocco off my top 100. That could be a future blast or a past blast. But he was a guy who worked with anybody. And this cage match that Greeny mentioned, you have to look it out. It's amazing. And even late 85, when they were doing the teasing and they had Trudy in the briefcase and all that kind of stuff, there was just such... a mystery about him as a character midway through 85 going into the end of 85. They did the trade. There was actually a trade. Bobby traded Adonis and the Missing Link, who ended up leaving anyway. You could check out JR's and my Vintage Vault refreshes for the all-too-brief career of the Missing Link, who will not be in anybody's top 100, at least as far as I know. And in return... Jimmy Hart gets Adrian Adonis, and he was the perfect... I've said this on past vaults too, Greeny. Certain heels are perfect characters for certain managers. And when Adrian was the tough guy, you could see him fitting with Bobby in the group with Stud and all those guys. But when he was developing this character, Bobby, not the right manager for that. For Jimmy, who's kind of an eccentric in any way, fit like a glove. And nobody can argue. And also, you gotta also take this into account when you're thinking about work rate in your formula for Adrian Adonis. This is a guy who had to deal with Uncle Elmer and some other pieces of meat that could barely bring much to the table. George Animal Steel, way beyond the zenith of his career. He was pretty much the twilight of his career. Adrian Adonis did more... in that 3-year stretch from pretty much 84 when he broke off, 84 from when he was with Dick Murdoch, and I want to get to them in a minute, to WrestleMania 3, and he was gone pretty much shortly after after WrestleMania 3, and then, of course, he sadly passed away on the 4th of July in 1988 in that terrible van crash in the official place is Lewisport, Newfoundland. Him and a few other wrestlers. Let me give you the official names. William Mike Kelly Arco, Victor Pat Kelly Arco, and Dave Wildman McKegney. They drove off, their van slipped off an icy bridge into a creek, and he suffered severe head injuries. His head probably went through the window or whatever, and he passed away. But from that 3 year, 2.5 year stretch, from 84, well, actually, I guess 3.5 years, from 84 till mid 87, he was one of the most important heels in this company. Now, one more thing I want to get into about character for him. We all know that TNT is one of the most unwatchable pieces of dreck in the history of wrestling television. And they're all on the network. But there are at least two or three episodes that you have to check out. And a couple of them were during Adonis and Dick Murdoch's run as World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Champions. One is Adonis, you know, it's like Mean Gene takes a tour of each guy's home area. So Adonis, they're walking through Queens or the Bronx or wherever it was, and, you know, the homeless people and the garbage and everything. And then they go to Texas, and, you know, Dick Murdoch treats his help like crap and all that stuff. And then there's an incredible segment, and I think the guys from Titans probably love this. Chief J. Strongbow comes on an episode, and they're doing like a dancing, like a rain dance kind of ceremony out in the parking lot in Baltimore outside the TNT studios. Meanwhile, here comes Adonis and Murdoch peeling in through the parking lot in their big Buick or whatever, heckling them, throwing beer cans. Oh, it was tremendous heel work. Tremendous heel work. Adrian Adonis got it, Greeny. You know, one of those guys who just got it. As where he'll go on my list, I'm still kicking it around, and maybe another couple of fine gentlemen or ladies here at Place Me Nation will do another pod blast to support Adrian Adonis. What'd you say? 80s? Is that what you had for you? Is that where you said you were going to go?
Somewhere in the 70s.
I gotta be honest. As I continue looking at my list, I could easily put him in my low 60s, between 60 and 65 maybe. Because obviously there's other guys in the 80s who had better work rate and obviously better heel characters, etc. But this is a guy that should not be forgotten. As a key cog in the run of the Federation era, early on with Senior, and then when Vince went national, this is a guy that knew that he had to change things up. There's so many tough guy heels. He knew to change things up. Even when Vince was, even when Gorilla and them were incredibly uncomfortable and politically incorrect doing house show announcing about the character, it didn't affect anything. The guy got it. So think long and hard when you're putting together your lists about where you putting Adrian Adonis on there and where you would put him. Greeny and I have him somewhere between 60 and 80. You know, if you want him higher, all the power to you. I'd be proud of you. But think about him, because this is a guy who did a lot in a very short period of time in the WWF in the mid to late 80s when Vince needed good, solid heels. Because it takes a lot to turn Roddy Piper babyface, okay? Even though he was getting cheered as a heel in early 86, you needed the right heel to flip the switch and turn and really get the hot rod in everybody's good graces. Adrian Adonis did that. Greeny, great job. That was awesome. Thank you for joining us for this quick pod blast on the adorable one, Adrian Adonis. Stay with PlaceToBeNation.com as we continue to delve into the 100 greatest superstars in World Wrestling Federation / entertainment history. For Jason Greenhouse, I'm Scott Criscolo. Enjoy the debate.